everyone to the meeting. Hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. I would like to remind members of the obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber for the duration of discussion on the item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once discussion on the item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. Members should remember that the microphones work as a queuing system. If your microphone is lit red, you have precedence. Flashing green is next in the queue, and then solid green. Please do not press your microphone button again when it's lit up red, as you'll lose your place in the queue. There may be some members in attendance virtually, and it's been agreed that all members in the chamber are brought in to speak on an issue before any remote delegates. Therefore, if you are attending remotely, please use the chat facility to indicate your wish to speak, and that will bring members in once all those within the chamber have spoken. Instant messages should be kept to the following letters. Type Q if you wish to ask a question, type C for a comment, type P if you wish to propose, type S if you wish to second. Please refrain from making any other comments using instant messaging. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Great. So, item number one, apologies.
Chair, we have apologies from Councillors Selena Murphy and Councillor Truesdale.
Oh, there's one from Councillor Howie.
Councillor Finn.
Anyone else?
Yep. Thank you, Chair. Just apologies for Councillor Hannah and Councillor Riley, please.
Okay. Anyone else? Nope. All right. Moving on to item two, declarations of interest. Are there any? Great. Item number three, Southern Eastern Trust. I would like to send a warm welcome to Chief Executive Roisin Coulter, Nuala McGinn, and Dr. Andrew Dobbin on Teams. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me all right? Technology, since I was here the last time. Hi everybody, nice to see you all again, and delighted to be here this evening to share some of the ongoing challenges, issues, progress that's happening really across the Trust, and just give you a short, maybe a 10-minute overview, and then I know that the most important point is to have that two-way conversation. So I'm delighted to be joined today by Nuala McGeehan, who's a senior nurse here in the Down Hospital, and Nuala is shadowing me and just undertaking a leadership development programme at the moment in terms of working with politicians and influencing. So this is a really good learning opportunity for Nuala. And also then by my lead consultant in emergency medicine, Dr. Andrew Dobbin, who is the clinical lead for all of our emergency departments across the Trust. What I would plan to do is to talk about four key areas. One, winter pressures in terms of what we're doing across the Trust to manage and support our staff and our services. Elective care in terms of waiting lists, the financial position. And then we have been asked a specific question in relation to children's short breaks provision. And I will cover that. I do think, however, the question was asked by Councillor Truesdale, who is an apology, so I'll cover it quite briefly, and then I can send in a response in writing if you would like as well. You can provide that. As always, I want to say in every council meeting to say thank you to our staff that work right across the South Eastern Trust. It's really, really important, and I'm sure all of you, and I know that there's correspondence from many of you on a regular basis, is that our staff are, you know, our most valuable resource, very genuinely, and we very much appreciate and recognise the valuable contribution that they make. We couldn't provide the services without our staff, and therefore we genuinely do everything we possibly can to support them. And in that, we would want to put on record, we absolutely support the need for all of our staff across health and social care to receive their pay award. That is really, really important, and not only in health and social care, but across all of the public sector. Just last week, all chief executives were presenting at the Northern Ireland Health Committee, and that was one of the points in which we raised as well. And we know it is a wider debate and issue for the whole executive, not just the health committee. But again, it is really, really important. We want to do everything we can, I suppose, to minimise the stress that our staff are under, and the pay award is one thing that does cause them stress. Secondly, obviously for our patients and our clients, we want to avoid staff feeling that they need to take industrial action, particularly going in, you know, through the winter period. That's really, really important. So hopefully, and we are continuing to work with trade union colleagues, with staff, with the Department of Health, to try and see can we get closer to being able to ensure that staff do receive their pay award. In relation to winter pressures, everyone will know almost that, you know, there is not much difference between winter, spring, summer and autumn now in our health service. But we continue to face a lot of pressure in relation to unscheduled care. We have been working very closely to establish, and you may not have heard of it, it's the Regional Coordination Centre, and that is really where all trusts have now come together to establish one coordination centre for Northern Ireland that will organise the flow of patients working in cooperation with the ambulance service. So rather than each trust on its own, so then that it just means that we can make easier to equalise the pressure across our system. The numbers of patients waiting more than 12 hours in our emergency departments in Northern Ireland has increased by 13%. So that is a very significant challenge, and many of you, and all of you I'm sure, are very aware about the pressures, the number of people attending our emergency departments across Northern Ireland, and the length of time it does take to see patients, and sometimes the length of time patients are staying in our emergency departments. So that is something that we are very focused on. However, really the demand for emergency care services in Northern Ireland just does simply exceed the capacity that's there. So what we need to do is to manage the services from end to end and really focus on how long people are staying in our hospitals, and then their arrangements for discharge. So trying to make sure that particularly older people who are medically fit for discharge, we want them to be discharged as quickly as possible. So to make sure whether they're returning to their own home with support, for example, through domiciliary care, or whether they are being admitted into a care home, that we get those beds as quickly as we possibly can. And there are some really good examples of where we have led improvements in relation to this, in fact, in the South Eastern Trust. So the number of unmet domiciliary care packages has reduced from almost 900 to just over 200. So there's an intense focus on trying to make sure that we do provide services in people's homes or as close to homes as possible. And that is really, really important, because the longer we can support older people to stay at home and to receive support at home, the better. Some of the things also that we are doing for winter, we've put in our winter planning and looking at how we can work more closely with the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service. The other thing I wanted to mention is in relation to, not sure, maybe again you may be aware, a local community group has suggested that there may be a petition in the local community to offer the public the opportunity to sign a petition that would look to have the opening of the 24/7 emergency department at the Down Hospital. Again, I think it's very important in terms of, for me, being genuine, being open and honest, that the emergency department in the Down Hospital has not been open since September 2010, some 14 years ago. And we are on record saying there will be no plans to reopen the 24/7 emergency department in the Down Hospital, and that will not be possible because it is totally at odds with the recommendations in the Bingoa report. It also would not fit in with the, as you know, the Minister's recently launched the reconfiguration of the hospital network in Northern Ireland, setting out a model which actually is identical to the model that we have in the South Eastern Trust, with one major area acute hospital at the Ulster Hospital, supported by local hospitals, which we have got already in the Lagan Valley and the Down. So we have got a very successful urgent care, consultant-led urgent care centres in both Lagan Valley and Down, and that model is, first of all, safe for patients, clinically appropriate and sustainable. So I do think it is important for us to be honest with the public in that I don't feel it is fair or appropriate to suggest people sign a petition for something that is never actually possible to deliver. And again, I just think that's important to hear. I am going to ask Dr. Andrew Dobbin, again, I think it's so important, as you know, working across health and social care to listen to those who are best placed to advise us. So our senior medical teams, our doctors, in terms of providing clinical leadership and for us as public representatives to be able to listen to those who are best professionally qualified to set out the models for emergency care. So, and maybe just again, I know many of you maybe know Dr. Andrew Dobbin, and he's been to council a number of times with us. He's actually on shift at this moment in time in the emergency department, and he works across Down and Lagan Valley urgent care centres as well. So he's just quickly jumped out for half an hour because this is a very important point for us to cover. And again, for me, working in partnership, hand in hand with my senior clinical team, I would like to ask Dr. Dobbin to say a few words in relation to that, if that would be helpful for everybody, because it's in the spirit of us working together and making sure that there are open, honest messages and communication with the public. Andrew?
Can I just check I can be heard okay? Is that...
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks very much for this opportunity, Roisin, for the invite and to speak to you councillors tonight. I suppose since I joined the South Eastern Trust in 2011, I've been part of the team that's been delivering care on the Down site, and its emergency department initially and more recently as the Urgent Care Centre. And at times covered significant gaps in that service to keep it propped up at difficult times. Really welcome this opportunity to speak very briefly, if I can, just on this idea of an emergency department on that site and the conversation about 24/7 ED. I mean, an emergency department is the front door of a hospital and should have the expertise and the capability of dealing with life-threatening injury and illness without prior appointment. And unfortunately, that's just something that cannot be delivered in the Down site. Behind the emergency department, there's a minimum number of services that need to be in place that have never existed there: acute surgery, acute medicine, acute paediatrics, gynaecology, anaesthetics, critical care, and rapid turnaround labs, all things that we're unable to deliver. So having a front door that can do lots of things but nothing behind it adds to a patient risk. As you know, there's been significant problems with recruitment to that site. We ran pre-COVID with locum dependencies over 60%, but actually the changes that we've put in place has allowed the Trust to recruit well in the recent years, and we've managed to get all medical staff now in our emergency department who are full-time employed rotating through either the Down or Lagan Valley, and that locum dependency as a consequence is reduced to under 20%, and this week actually is the first week where there's no locums working in the Down on this week. I think it's really important to be honest with yourselves and be honest with the public. We cannot deal with life-threatening injuries or illnesses. One person being there is not enough to deliver that level of care, and we must focus on patient outcomes, and that's why we've delivered this consultant-led phone first that is directing people to the right place first time. And we have to celebrate the fact that high numbers of those patients are having local, timely care in the Down. Similar numbers, in fact, that were being seen prior to any change. And on top of that, we're delivering an extra 8,000 to 10,000 phone call advice or redirection to patients. One of the reasons that we really struggled with recruitment down there is because it was an emergency department with no other services behind that front door. So doctors had to be of a certain capability, but also the recognition that those doctors were under significant stress, unable to deliver the quality of care that they wanted to in those sites. So those changes have made it possible to recruit and deliver that security in terms of staffing. The other thing just to mention in this moment with you is the fact that I suppose having this idea of an ED open on that site is to get people admitted locally, but the Down Hospital site isn't sitting with empty beds. The beds are all being utilised. In fact, the Down's opened significantly additional extra beds in the last number of years to help with the pressures across the system. So having the front door open for many reasons as a walk-in service emergency department isn't going to be achieved, isn't going to be deliverable. And I suppose I just really appreciate your candour and support in spreading that to the locals. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Andrew. And again, just to remind Council that, you know, we are absolutely so proud of all of the services and our staff who work in the Down Hospital. And the Down Hospital is fully occupied. We've got a fantastic range of services, and we will continue to look for other opportunities to develop and introduce new services. So quickly moving on then, in terms of waiting lists, the Down does play a key role for us in the South Eastern Trust as part of our hospital network, and that's how you know as how we operate our services. So both the Down and Lygon Valley are regional day procedure centres, and we are now providing surgical operations and day case procedures for people from all over Northern Ireland, and the feedback as evidenced on Care Opinion is absolutely excellent, it really is. So more day surgery and more endoscopy scope procedures in the Down, which is really, really good. And we recently welcomed the Minister to visit the Down Hospital, and that went very, very well indeed. So there's lots more to be done in terms of waiting lists. As you know, waiting lists in Northern Ireland are the longest in Europe. That for us is such a concern. That really the only way to tackle waiting lists in Northern Ireland is to invest more money in providing more activity. That's why elective care and waiting lists is one of the priorities that the Minister has, and we welcome that, alongside mental health and tackling inequalities. And that's really, really important. Looking at, you know, how we need to address those who live in the areas of greatest deprivation and have greater inequalities than others to maximise their benefits and their healthy life expectancy. And that is really, really important. In relation to finance, council members will be aware about the finance funding gap that's been well documented. And that is very, very challenging across a number of public sector services. Again, you know, there are so many interdependencies, and that links into whether it's health and social care, whether it's justice and policing, whether it's education. There are a lot of knock-on impacts right across. The health service has delivered greater savings this year than I would have ever seen in my career. £200 million of savings has had to be taken out from the health service this year, and there is still a gap of £100 million that would be required to fulfil the pay award. So whenever you're aware of figures like that, you know, we can see why there isn't enough investment being put in to address the waiting lists that would be needed to bring the waiting lists down to sufficient levels. So if there was additional investment, it would be wonderful, because again, I'm sure many of the public who look for your help and support, one of the biggest concerns to people in Northern Ireland is their access to treatment, their access to being treated on a waiting list. You know, that really is one of the biggest things that we need to do, and we really need to find a way together, you know, is how can we get more investment and how can we secure more activity across both for day cases and inpatients. Really, really important. And the final point then is to address children with complex needs. Just that was a specific question for Council. Again, it was raised at Health Committee, and it is an area that we're very focused on. In the last 4 years, since really the COVID pandemic, the number of children who are requiring residential care, so to really to live in a children's home, has doubled. And that is what's having an impact on our ability to provide respite care for children with complex disabilities. So respite as in a short break for the family. So, for example, in the South Eastern Trust, we have gone from supporting 5 young people in care, long-term residential care, to 14. so that you can understand then the places that we were previously using for respite have had to be used to bring young people into care, and they are staying there. That is their home. That has to be the priority. At the moment, we've got 83 young children, young people, waiting for short breaks. This was highlighted by a number of families recently on a recent Spotlight programme, which we absolutely understood why families feel. They really just feel, you know, at the end of their tether, last resort, they do desperately need support. And again, the minister has recognised that. So we do continue to provide respite breaks for families at Greenhill in Newcastle. And we've also put proposals in place. So the minister has announced £2 million in a year. And all trusts have put proposals forward in terms of services and things that we could do to increase the support for those families. And then longer term, so from next year, there'll be £13 million. That's across Northern Ireland. That'll be recurrent. So there will be plans and proposals in place to strengthen the support. And it's not just about respite services as an overnight stay. So it's really, families need much more than that. They need wraparound support. They need support at different times of the day and the evening. It's, you know, it's not just 9 to 5. We want to be able to put in extended teams, more learning disability nurses, more places. And we're hoping to open another home within the trust to provide spaces for two more families to receive short breaks. So there's a very detailed plan. And what we need to do now is make sure that comes into action as quickly as we possibly can. So I think hopefully I've given you an overview of some of the key areas. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the presentation. So we're going to open up the floor for questions. We're going to take three at a time to give our guests our opportunity to formulate an answer. All right, Mr. Hammett.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Well, first of all, just to thank you, Roisin, for your presentation and for Nuala, and especially Andrew, giving up his time when he's on shift. I think that shows that, you know, you do want to come in and present us and let us know what's happening as a council. I don't know where I would start with the issues that are coming through the door. You've touched on a number of them already, and I won't rehearse them. Suffice to say that the staff are never to blame for any of this. They are always praised to the highest regard. And when we look at, you mentioned the campaign there, you only had open the down recorder this week and there's a full page of complaints. None of them are about staff, they're about the services. And it is, I suppose, a recognition that the NHS is completely underfunded. It has been for many, many years. But it's, you know, how do we address that? And how do we give patients comfort and reassurance whenever, like, it was heartbreaking to read about people talking about their loved one dying. And, you know, it's really, really heart-wrenching. But it's a reality, too, that how are we ever going to fix it and how are we ever going to get to that point? It would be remiss of me not to mention that several constituents have came to the office this week raising concerns about Ward 15 closing for 2 weeks over Christmas. I think that's an extremely disappointing decision. We're like dealing with and talking about people with really severe addictions over the period of time when I would imagine as an addict that would be the toughest time to actually try and get through it, and especially for their families. So it's just really disappointing. And we were given assurances in July that this would be dealt with, that Ward 15 was secure, but now we're facing into the depths of winter and the worst time for any addict, and being told and hearing on the grapevine that it's going to close for 2 weeks. So it's going to impact families, users. It's going to impact staff who maybe had planned out their own Christmas holidays or worked out their rotas. And I suppose it's really to try and get a reassurance from you about why that decision was taken and why over such a vulnerable period of time.
And that's more than one question. Would you like to answer that?
Yes.
Thanks.
What do you need the mic to? I'm used to green for go, folks, not red for stop. Anyway, Nuala, thanks very much. Really appreciate the comments you've made there, and support for staff. It's really, really important. Again, you know, all of the genuinely mean that. All of the feedback that you do, you're all very good in terms of providing feedback, you know, on behalf of constituents, to thank staff and appreciate them, and everything that does come in, I do forward them on to the teams themselves, and it does mean a lot to people, and often just the word thank you means a lot to every single member of our teams. And, you know, how do we address the issues across all of our public services, and particularly, you know, health and social care services, where just the demand is just so much greater than what the funded capacity is. And I think these decisions are really so much, they're really for the entire Northern Ireland executive to consider, because we talk about, you know, parity with the rest of the UK. But and that's why, you know, if there are decisions regarding, you know, lack of revenue raising measures, then this is where we are with the level of public funding that's available for public services. So, you know, water, domiciliary care, fuel payments, prescriptions, all of those things are in place in other parts of the UK. So there is that other element to the funding packages. That probably are areas that the executive may need to revisit, and I know that I have seen that. In relation to Ward 15, I will get a full position in relation to that, and I'll send that back out through so that you will get that. And I note all of the comments and the concerns. We're actually working through it at the moment. We're going to be reviewing it tomorrow. And I need to find out just about some of the rationale for the time period. I think there may have been something regarding that patients may not actually want to be in residential care away from their families over the actual Christmas period, but I'll find that out. We have to see what the details are, and I'll get that for you. I don't have anything further on it just tonight because we're meeting about it tomorrow, but I'll get back to you on it.
That's great. Thank you. Okay. Councillor Sharpton.
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and thank you, Roisin and Andrew. One thing that we can always say about the Trust, and particularly Roisin, is that you certainly are forthcoming with your answers and never hold back, and hopefully we do have a good working relationship, and we continue to have that. Just touching on Councillor Hanlon's point, we actually attempted to bring this special council meeting with the Trust forward by a couple of months, and obviously Diaries didn't particularly work because of the concern around Ward 15. And then we got word that Ward 15 had been resolved, and I take your answer, and hopefully we do have a solution. But part of your answer, if the clients not want to be in residential, obviously, that is a case-by-case scenario, and that can't be just a broad statement for everyone. So it will possibly be to the detriment of some and not to others. But we've talked about finance quite a lot this evening. And, you know, just even 2 weeks ago, it was announced that $350 million was being given to the health department for a number of reasons. From your own Trust perspective, how much of that $350 million do you expect to receive to help you with the pressures that you are facing as a Trust? And the reason why I ask around the finance particularly, whenever we have seen it before, the finance has been an issue, the down has negatively been impacted where things have had to be closed or removed. So tonight, I'm asking for two sides of that is, what additional services do you hope are planned to bring to the Down? Now, that can be short, medium, or long term, and that can be aspirational, that you know, this is something that you'd like to see, but you don't have a hard roadmap for. But given the financial pressures that are being faced by the sector and the department, is there a risk that services could be closed at the Down as part of cost-saving exercises? You know, you've touched on $200 million savings this year. $100 million needed to be found for the pay award, which we all agree they should get. But there's additional cost savings that you need to do. So what does that mean for the Down? My next point, and I'm sure other colleagues have got this, is the pressure of the Ulster and the time to be admitted or even to be seen at the emergency department is significant. And, you know, I've heard stories where someone's been lying in a corridor for 12, 14 hours. You know, what is the trust doing to address that? But furthermore, what can the Down do to alleviate that pressure? And one of the other things that I'm interested in is around the mental health. And obviously the Down and the Downshire site has led on that. And even recently you've opened additional services in relation to that. Is the Trust also providing nurses and practitioners in association with the ambulance service? So obviously there's that service now where you have trained people that can take a call when someone is feeling suicidal and they can address that. And how is that partnership going and where do you see the Trust role in that? So I've thrown quite a lot, I do apologise. Okay.
Thank you. Councillor Jackson.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just want to thank Roisin and Nuala and Andrew for bringing the presentation tonight. I just wanted to highlight just a few constituency families that have contacted me on behalf of them, just regarding their children have been on a lengthy waiting list for the child development clinic and the autism assessment clinic. And obviously the impact of the lengthy waiting times are obviously detrimental to getting timely assessment from the necessary professionals and the input to support their development and to get a diagnosis. And, you know, I'm sure these waiting times have been already looked at, but I wonder tonight, you know, can we have any sort of update on those waiting times? It is an acute situation where a family is maybe every day they're waiting on an assessment they got because of how detrimental it is, and the fact that some of them are waiting nearly a year on an assessment, possibly, you know, is quite serious. So I just wondered, was there any update on that?
Thank you. And also, Councillor Enright.
Thanks, Chair. Two questions. My colleague, Jill Truesdale, submitted three questions for tonight, one to the South Eastern Trust and two to the Southern Trust. How does that handle it? Are they going to be answered separately, or do I have to ask the question?
The South Eastern Trust is going first, Councillor Enright, and then the colleagues from the Southern Trust.
So do I need to ask the question for Jill, or how?
Yeah.
Okay. So just on point that I'd like to make is a lot of issues about people from this area going up to the Ulster and queuing for long periods, you know. And a recent experience of that myself where I had some stone shards lodged in my eye and I was referred to the Ulster at 5 o'clock in the evening. I stayed there then for 18 hours and whilst I was there I bumped into all sorts of other people from this area who had minor injuries like myself. And you know, 8:30 the following morning when I still hadn't been seen, I phoned up the minor injuries unit in the Down and I explained I'd been there now for 18 hours and they agreed to see me and cleared out the eye and extracted the stone, you know. But it seems to me if the queues are so difficult and so long in the Ulster and, you know, everyone that was there from this area was telling me how they had waited for so many hours, and it's, you know, there's nobody in this room who wouldn't tell you the same thing. Is there not something we can do to make the minor injuries unit or the daytime A&E unit in the Down see more people? Because I didn't have to wait when I went to the minor injuries unit here, you know.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. If I can just check if Dr. Dobbin's still on, then Andrew would be best placed to respond to. There's a number of comments there in relation to the emergency department. If he's gone, I'll take them. He's still there. No, okay.
I'm still here. I suppose start with the last question. Disappointing that you had to come up to the Ulster Hospital and have a long wait. The minor injury unit at the weekend opened at 5 o'clock in the Down, and during the weekdays, the staff there till 6 o'clock. to see patients who arrive. The minor injuries in the Ulster hospitals open up 7 days a week, 365 days a year, until 6 o'clock. And actually next year, we're hopefully moving into a new premises where we plan to extend that to 8 o'clock at night. And it's proximity will be just underneath where the current emergency department is. So we'll be able to manage our waiting room space much better. In terms of can they see more, I suppose there's an onus on us to try and ensure that the public know what our service is, and probably is always worthwhile considering advertising what we can do and how to contact us, both in Downpatrick and in Agan Valley, and ensure we maximise those services. There is days in Downpatrick where there's opportunities to do more, we should maximise that definitely. I think Councillor Sharvin talked about stability of services. I can't speak for all services, but as I said at the start, we're actually a more stable service than we've ever been in my time. Our locum dependency is reduced. We've recruited staff. All our staff now rotate round and are happy to rotate round, knowing that the service is safer for them to work in and better for patients. We've got additional consultants from Castle Whelan who are starting in February in the urgent care centre. He'll be working on a Monday. And also the hospital has recruited two consultants recently to the inpatient teams, and certainly there's opportunities there in terms of what the Down can do more with the priorities and the trust being things like hospital at home as well, which I'm sure Roisin can touch on. But yes, there's plans to improve that access, expand the hours in the Ulster site to try and soak up some of those patients who are having a poor deal at the moment if they turn out of ours.
Okay, thank you, Andrew, and I'll pick up the rest. Just following on from that, sometimes as well as just the language that we use, the more consistent we can be in terms of what is in the Down, and I would just ask if you can, it's an urgent care centre in the Down. It's much more than a minor injuries unit, and it is consultant-led, so there's always a consultant, highly qualified emergency medicine doctor on duty in the Down Urgent Care Centre and in the Lagan Valley. So that is really, really important. I actually took the point there, and I think that might be helpful if prior to Christmas we do push out some more communications again to the public to remind them of the opening hours of the services that we can provide. You know, we're seeing our numbers of patients are growing year on year for people who are able to access services. And we want to do as much as we can close to home as possible. So that is one of the things in terms of what you're saying, Gareth, in terms of services in the Down. You know, whenever we talk as well about what more would we like to do, it is in the context of available resource, whether that be the workforce that we've got available or the funding that we've got available. So, you know, it's important to be realistic in terms of if we're actually taking hundreds of millions of pounds out of the health service in Northern Ireland, where would the additional money come to provide more new services when actually you're having to take so much money out? Now, that is also a space for, yes, we need to be as productive and efficient as we can be with the resources that we have already, and we're very, very clear on that. So, you know, we are delivering a savings plan of in the region of £30 million this year for the South Eastern Trust, so that's what it means for us. And how we've been doing that, similar to my colleagues in other trusts. So that's looking at how we can promote as many permanent posts as possible. That's what we want. We want to reduce our reliance on agency and bank staff. We want to have people who have a permanent job in the trust. We've also looking at how we can reduce the number of medical locum staff that we have, and again recruit more permanent medical staff. And those are some of the key areas, because 70% of the resource that we spend on health and social care is on our workforce, on our salaries and wages. So that's obviously what we want to do, is get the best use of those resources. What would we like to do more of in the Down, if possible? So if there was investment available, we would be absolutely delighted to do more day case surgery work in our day procedure centre, and more endoscopy services, because those are, you know, areas that the Down is fantastic at, and there is a small amount of capacity that is uncommissioned. But as you know, because of the financial situation, it's very, very difficult to secure additional investment, and we recognise that. So we want to continue playing our part in relation to that. And the other one of the key priorities for us right across the Trust, and the Down play a key role in that, is we want to try and focus on providing better services for frail older people. That is an absolute priority for us, and it's one of our quality improvement focuses as well across the organisation. So, as you know, in the Down, we've got the Rapid Assessment Centre for older people. We want to look at the best model for developing that. We want to get the hospital at home service rolled out right across the trust. We've already got the multidisciplinary teams in primary care right throughout every GP practice in the Down area. As you know, we were the pilot for that in our trust area. So that lends itself very well to be able to provide hospital at home services in partnership with access for older people into the hospital if they need it. And, you know, everybody wants to have their care either in their own home or as close to home as possible. That's really, really important. So that's what we would like to do. And we're looking at how we can plan to do that. There are many, many opportunities for advanced nursing roles. So advanced nurse practitioners, specialist nurses, particularly in frailty and caring for older people. And I think that would be excellent. I will always remind the council, you know, that over 85% of our services in the Down area are provided outside of the Down Hospital. So in terms of the scale, the level of services, the types of services, and, you know, so to remind ourselves, you know, that there are services for, you know, people in the community, people with physical and learning disability, mental health, children's services, older people's services. It's so, so important to sort of be mindful of that. And again, the message in which it comes out is that, you know, it's not about just one building with one set of services. There are so many services that are provided right across the community. In relation to the mental health piece, this is a really good news story between the partnership between the South Eastern Trust and the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service, and we were sharing this again last week at Health Committee, where we are the only trust at this moment in time where our mental health nurses, practitioners, have actually gone and taken roles to work within the control room in NIAS. And for me, this is the start of something that can really make a difference. So we have committed to doing that. And as a result, the calls coming in from patients who are in crisis or in mental health difficulties, we've been able to reduce the ambulance call-outs by 40%. So that's really, really significant and much better for patients. And that is because, naturally, the staff working in the NIAS control room are not mental health trained. And we've also been able to benefit from our mental health practitioners able to provide that specialist advice and to patients not only from the South Eastern Trust area, but also now to those who are from the Belfast Trust area and the Northern Trust area, and that's through the implementation of the Encompass programme, so that the staff have access to the records and the information in relation to those patients. So that's really, really important in terms of trying to get helping with our ambulance service and also then reducing our pressure on the emergency departments. Johnny, you mentioned about the long waiting lists for children with special needs in terms of AHD assessment and autism assessment, and families are waiting very, very long periods of time in relation to that. Some are almost waiting sometimes 2 years, and it's having an impact then on their access to special needs education. We're just continuing really to work regionally to look at how we can best address that. But I do absolutely appreciate the level of concern it does bring for families. And it also then does link into not only children, but also then adults with autism as well, and what we need to do for that. I think I've covered all of those.
Thank you. Sir Helen,
I'll be brief. Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to circle back on your reply to my questions about Ward 15. So, to me, you have suggested that's a patient-led decision, that patients don't want to stay in over Christmas. I don't recall, and I'm not a medical profession, that that would have been the standard before, that it wouldn't have been closed over Christmas. As a matter of fact, Christmas is probably the busiest time, I would say, as a layperson. But I suppose if we think back to July, Hunter Sharvin's right, it would have been ideal to have you in before now, and we recognise the pressures on Darius, but that crisis time was because the consultant had left. Has that consultant been replaced? And what succession planning is there going to be to avoid a break in services again? And I think that's what the public and staff and service users and families want to be assured of. So hopefully at your meeting tomorrow, you'll be able to kind of round that off. And as you mentioned, communication is key. it's getting it out into the wider domain and into the public. And I do welcome your idea around promoting the urgent care as well, especially over the kind of winter period where mishaps do happen. So thank you.
Yes, thank you, Una. And I will come back to you, all of you, with the absolute the facts and the details in relation to Ward 15. And that the service in relation to supporting patients with addictions was really, really important for us in the Trust, as you know, and we're very, very keen that we would continue to provide that service. In fact, I think it's been recognised as one of the sub-regional services for patients with addictions, so through the South Eastern Trust area, and I genuinely appreciate how the support from Council in relation to services for those with mental health needs across the Trust, and the Down has a key role to play, as you all are very much aware. In relation to the I did provide an update in relation to Ward 15 before, and I think it was in the local papers as well, in terms of we did have someone leave. We did manage to arrange a replacement through our own workforce in relation to that, working with our wider mental health team and how we can support and sustain the Ward 15 service, and we're very, very grateful for that. And I will come back to you then, and as you've said, with the facts, because I'm not sure myself in relation to specific reasons for the 2 weeks at this moment in time, but we'll have that, we'll get that tomorrow.
Great. Well, once again, on behalf of Council, thank you so much for coming, Roisin Coulter, Nuala McGinn, and Dr. Andrew Dobbin. Thank you. All right, folks, we're now moving on to item number four, Southern Trust. In attendance tonight, we have Dr. Stephen Austin, the Medical Director, and Catherine Taggart, Director of Finance, Procurement and Estates. Welcome.
Thank you very much. We have prepared a presentation, if that's okay. We can have it started. Is it going to go up on the screen? Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you this evening. I am Catherine Taggart, the Director of Finance, Procurement and Estates in the Southern Trust, and I'm joined this evening by the Southern Trust Medical Director, Dr. Stephen Austin. As requested, we'll give you a brief overview this evening of the services carried out within the Trust over the past year. Hopefully you will find the slides a useful illustration of the great work of the staff and people within the Southern Trust. I'll begin just with a brief introduction about our Trust. The Southern Trust geography covers the council areas of Armagh City, Banbridge and Craigavon, parts of Newry and Mourne and Down and Milduster. The Trust provides health and social care services to approximately 391,000 residents of these areas, and to others who travel to the Southern Trust to avail of regionally provided services. The estimated population of the Southern Trust is expected to increase by 4% by 2030, with our over 65 to increase by 18% in the same period. This will result in growth in demand for our services, and our current capacity is not sufficient to meet this growth. We have over 15,000 exceptionally skilled workforce providing and supporting health and social care to our local population. Daily, we spend almost $3.3 million and have an extensive estate owning over 232 buildings. The following is a snapshot of our services. Annually, the Trust carries out 31,000 acute care at home visits, 5,000 babies delivered and 365,000 outpatient appointments held per year. In addition, the Southern Trust carries out some services for the region with our rapid diagnostic centre in South Trone Hospital, cataract day surgery in South Trone, and ophthalmology outpatient department in South Trone. The Trust faces many challenges that are common to all trusts, and you've heard many of them from Roisin earlier. In terms of finance, the 24-25 financial year has been the most difficult period for health and social care in recent years. The Trust began the year with a combined opening deficit of £378,000, and as Roisin has said, £200 million savings have been achieved within the 24-25 year, with a £100 million shortfall in relation to the payer settlement. Across all trusts, deficits have increased due to a shortfall in delivery against previous savings targets, significant inescapable funding pressures, notably in social care, with increased demand with ageing population, physical disability, mental health, learning disability and children's community services. Coupled with workforce overspends associated with vacancies and sickness absence, the financial position will remain difficult and the current annual crisis in health and social care will likely not be affordable. Significant investment and efficiency and reform will be needed to ensure financial sustainability in future years. Workforce challenges in recruiting and retaining staff when competing an international labour market, particularly in Daisy Hill with our proximity to the border, gives rise to challenges. And as you will be aware, in recent years with general surgery, medicine, obstetrics and gynaecology. Rising demand due to our growing population resulting in waiting times and overcrowding in ED across Northern Ireland, with longer discharges from hospital to community services and longer waiting times for elective procedures. Demand on social care is a challenge today. In the Southern Trust, we have 604 individuals on waiting lists for domiciliary care packages, equating to 5,340 hours of domiciliary care per week across our area. The Trust is well aware of our excessively long waiting lists to access our elective services, which are due to the significant demand capacity gaps across many of our services, which will require additional recurrent funding to address. Our strategic plan for 24-25 was launched earlier this year and has been very much focused on stabilisation and developing key enablers and how we can begin to then move to reform and transformation to address the ongoing challenges across health and social care. Our longer-term vision and strategy for 2030 is currently well developed using a co-produced approach with our staff, patient service users, carers and wider stakeholders. Given that Daisy Hill is within the Nuireann Mhuire Council area, I'll give you some of the highlights of the recent developments. Along with Craigavon, South Trone and Lurgan, Daisy Hill is an essential part of the Southern Trust Acute Hospital Network. We have a dedicated team of highly skilled and experienced staff working across a wide range of specialties, including mental health, paediatrics, obstetrics and gynaecology, coronary care, renal, surgery and general medicine, and our busy emergency department continues to operate as a type 1 consultant-led ED, assessing all medical and surgical patients. Daisy Hill Hospital was appointed as a regional elective overnight stay centre by the Health Minister Robin Swan in October 2022. Since then, the team have been working hard to recruit and rebuild planned surgery following the downturn following the pandemic and the ongoing pressures on our medical beds. We have 7 additional theatre lists that have been offered recurrently from the 4th of November this year. The Daisy Hill Elective Overnight Stay Centre now offers 32 theatre lists on a weekly basis, which is 91% of full commission levels of activity with trajectory ongoing to be at 100% by March 2025. With excellent surgical facilities at Daisy Hill and following investment in training and equipment, the team can now undertake most specialties, including ENT, general surgery and dental for adults and children, gynaecology, and most recently have started breast and urology. We have a really enthusiastic and committed surgical team, Daisy Hill, continuing to strive to improve and develop services, and very keen to work with colleagues regionally to tackle unacceptable waiting lists. There are excellent theatre and diagnostic facilities on site with further plans for development. Following the recent investment in our electricity infrastructure, the acquisition of Monaghan Row in 2023, and alongside plans for our new community care treatment centre, which will expand the trust footprint in Uri and provide capacity to vital services. We continue to develop and promote Daisy Hill as a key acute hospital throughout this process. In response to the medical workforce challenges in Daisy Hill, as part of our stabilisation plans for acute inpatient medicine at the hospital, we introduced a new medical model last year and a number of initiatives to prevent hospital admission where appropriate, promoting same-day emergency care and community alternatives. So, for example, we have our new modular CT scanner. We further invested in an MRI scanner at Daisy Hill. We have a new medical ambulatory unit. A new discharge lounge was opened last year with a short stay unit and the new urgent care centre. These measures are in place and we are starting to see a stabilisation to the service as a result of our investment. The significant vacancies and challenges recruiting and retaining doctors nationally, regionally and locally, in September 2023, the Trust Medical HR team worked with Special Agency on a recruitment drive to India. 70 doctors were appointed to work across a range of grades and specialties in Craigavon and in Daisy Hill hospitals and have been arriving since October 2023. Similar to the international nurses, the international medical graduates take part in a specifically designed induction programme aimed at supporting and ensuring a smooth transition into Northern Ireland health and social care. It includes both corporate familiarisation, training and pastoral support to help them with practical issues and getting acquainted into their new community. This project received a silver award in the Staffing Solution of the Year category at the prestigious National HSG Partnership Awards. Other notable recent developments for Daisy Hill include a new women's health hub was opened in Daisy Hill, offering rapid access for gynaecology and early pregnancy support. The hub, which is staffed by gynaecologists, obstetricians, specialist nurses and midwives, aims to make sure that women get the most suitable care in the right place as quickly as possible. A new trauma and orthopaedic clinic was opened on the 3rd of September and is operating 5 days a week, offering fracture and orthopaedic outpatient clinics for people with bone and joint problems. In the past year, the renal team have celebrated 25 years of service. The renal service treats patients with kidney disease trust-wide and some border areas of the Republic of Ireland. They have been ranked top in the UK Renal Registry and among the best in the UK for patient experience and quality of care. Cardiology unit in the Daisy Hill is a strong, well-maintained unit with the benefit of Edith Donnelly, RCN Nurse of the Year, and Dr. Patricia Campbell, you've probably heard in the media over the past week, who is the lead, Northern Ireland lead for heart failure based in Daisy Hill Hospital. Finally, this year we mark 10 years of our very successful acute care at home service, which has prevented over 12,000 hospital admissions and supported earlier discharge for more than 2,000 people since it was set up in 2014. Developing and enhancing our very successful acute care at home service in the community brings better outcomes for service users who recuperate much better at home. And I'm very willing to provide any further information on any of the services that we've mentioned. And I understand, Chair, there were a number of questions received. I'm happy to answer those. Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for the presentation. So I'm going to take three councillors at a time. So first one is Councillor Mathers.
Now, thanks very much for the presentation. A comment on maybe two questions, if that's okay. I'd like to take this opportunity to mention and indeed thank the Daisy Hill Futures Group, who worked tirelessly to ensure the safety and forward thinking of our health facilities, but who have also had the vision in trying to secure services across the district. And my colleague Liz Kimmins, MLA, has been working with the Trust as well as the Department of Health and the Health Minister on the serious issues affecting maternity services in the Southern Trust, in particular Daisy Hill. Can you give me an update on the current situation and what work has been done to stabilise this critical service at Daisy Hill and indeed for the whole Southern Trust area? And secondly, is there a timeline for the completion of the Community Care Treatment Centre in Uri? I know this has been talked about for years and I believe it will cement the future of Daisy Hill Hospital. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Councillor Packett here.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll just link in with Councillor Mathers, just last part of his questions, in that what the Newry Clinical Hub, which had to be built for us, actually is the last, I think it's the very last one out of that whole project. Spread out over Northern Ireland over the last 8 to 10 years, and it still hasn't even commenced building yet, never mind in operation. So when it is eventually said, what do you envisage that the new hub will provide services, and are there additional services coming to it, to Newry, and what impact that will have on Daisy Hill? The other question I had is the interim, you mentioned MRI scanner. I understand that, yes, while we did get one MRI scanner in Uri, but I think there's another, there's no power to run it. I don't know whether there's information is that there's a generator there, but it's not operational. But again, that's still holding the whole throughput of patients going into Daisy Hill and not having to go to Craigavon. That's holding that up and taking a lot of resources away from ambulances, etc. I wonder where that sits. The other couple of issues are around the emergency surgery there. Could you give us some assurance of how that's working out and what the future entails there? The acute care at home team, yes, we welcome that. Very It's really proven very useful, and is there any further development of that in terms of technology and further services you'll be broadened out there? The other quite pressing issue, I suppose, as well, I don't, you haven't mentioned really, would be around the dentistry. That could certainly fall inside your trust remit well, but there's a serious situation around the availability of the health service centres. Dentistry and people's access to dental care, especially young people now going on. So I'd like to hear what's happening there and that has wide implications. The other thing that has been mentioned to me really, and I'd just like to hear your comments on it, that there's some concern certainly in our area that there's quite a spike in gynecological cancers in the area. And I know it's probably too soon to be able to get any real, I suppose, figures on it, reliable figures, the whole thing. But certainly there is, people are very concerned about the level of that. And I wonder, you know, is there any linkage in that in the queues and the waiting times there is and there are for people with possible symptoms or know, even contemplating having themselves looked at and examined, and the waiting is that long that, you know, is this potentially causing this type of reaction on outcomes? So I hope you'll pick that up for me as well. Thanks. So I think that's all I have at this moment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Councillor Young.
Hi, thanks for the presentation. Watching that, actually, because there's been so much negativity around Daisy Hill, it was really enlightening to see all the positive things that are happening and all of the services and the newer services. I'm actually part of the Daisy Hill Futures Group, but what I wanted to ask was, in terms of the international recruitment, I know that we got almost 70 recruits from India, and I know that there is obviously a process and that they will be working across sites, and I know that some are still going through their induction processes, and that can take a bit longer than you maybe first anticipated. But in terms of Daisy Hill specifically, how many of those doctors that have been recruited do you think will be specifically working in Daisy Hill? Thank you.
Thank you very much. So hopefully Catherine got all those questions.
So maybe I'll take the first one. So Stephen Austin, Medical Director of Southern Trust. Maybe start with the Daisy Hill Futures. Yes, thanks very much. We've been engaging with Daisy Hill Futures over a period of time, met them quite recently over the last number of weeks as well, and looking at some of the issues that they're bringing to us to try and get better understanding of the needs of the population and us linking with them, sharing information. The most recent update was in maternity services, and there's been a lot of work to try and stabilise those. The issues broadly were about staffing on two areas. One was about midwifery staffing, and the other was about medical staffing. So in terms of midwifery staffing, there's been recent recruitments to improve the numbers of midwives, and those midwives are beginning, again, taking up post in and around January. So what we're doing at the present is stabilising the service on, with our current staff. And then whenever the new staff come on board, they'll be sort of be inducted and brought in, so that'll stabilise numbers because there'll be more staff available to make sure all the shifts are better covered. So we're working in that quite extensively at the present time, trying to even out the staffing so that we're not oversupplied in one time, and then make sure that areas where the staffing is a bit tighter to make sure that staff are able to optimise their time. And we're also using agency workers as appropriate as well to fill any current gaps. In terms of medical staffing, there's a sort of a more medium-term issue where we've had a number of retirements, certainly in the Daisy Hill area over the last year, and that's what the difficulty is, of course, trying to recruit new consultants. One of the difficulties with that is, of course, across Northern Ireland and back across the United Kingdom, there is really a national shortage of trained consultants to do with workforce planning at a regional and national level. So we are still recruiting actively for those consultants, and there's some interviews hopefully happening in the next number of weeks. Hopefully we'll be successful. But we're trying to make sure the jobs that people come to are as attractive as possible, and to make sure that that allows us to reduce the dependence on agency locum doctors as well. So it's really important to do that too. So at the present time, we have stabilised the service over these current months and keeping on certainly after Christmas when our midwives come on board, and that allows us to stabilise further. There are on occasion times whenever there's staffing pressures, in fact on both sides, Craig Avenue and Daisy Hill, where we occasionally have to divert care. Usually that's due to medical needs of particular patients that we can't provide on a particular site and might need to divert care. Those are for the shortest period as possible, and there's a very strict escalation protocol in place, which allows us to absolutely minimise that time so we can try and maintain access for patients as required. So that's a stabilisation for that. The other things you mentioned about the international medical doctors, maybe just go down to the bottom. Yes, we did quite a long recruitment for international medical doctors, and we're around about 70 doctors were recruited. Around about 40% are going to Daisy Hill Hospital particularly, when we have a number of doctors at various grades. We do have actually more consultant level doctors have come to and working in Daisy Hill. They are getting upskilled. We find obviously there's cultural differences between India and Northern Ireland, and obviously it takes a bit of time for the doctors to get suitably orientated, and there's a bit of a jump for that, so that has taken a length of time. But the doctors are getting upskilled and training, and we have, for example, a number of medical consultant level colleagues who are working on our general medical rota, and we're also working for obstetrics as well, so as part of that programme, but across a range of specialists across our trust. And that's been very successful, but it has taken time to make sure the staff are fully embedded into practice. But that's a very, very positive thing for us. You'll see in the pictures there, some of our doctors are actually inputting, particularly with the General Medical Council, by trying to make sure that international doctors come to Northern Ireland, and the experience that we have got in Southern Trust is now being hopefully being spread and shared with colleagues across the region. So that's very important as well. You mentioned the acute care at home service. Yes, we're very proud of that, and certainly that's been well recognised in our service. We have significantly expanded that. So typically we have up to maybe 70 odd patients who we're supporting out in the community, and those are patients who would normally be in hospital. And the advantage of that is that we know that when particularly elderly patients come into hospital, they tend to decondition, and they not as mobile as they never leave, and quite often need extended packages of care afterwards. But if people can be maintained at home with consultant level care at home, they get much better results, they get much more focused care, and they're able to stay up with their loved ones and their own home surroundings. And certainly the feedback we're getting from patients is that that's much, much better for the patients and families as well, and they're not stuck effectively in prison and hospital for a number of days trying to get out again. So it's really, really important for that. I suppose somebody mentioned dentistry. We don't run all dental services in the Southern Trust area, but we do have a number of dentists who work in special needs dentistry, and we're certainly supporting them, provide services for our children and paediatric dental extraction lists in the Daisy Hill site particularly as well. And that's been expanded, and we're trying to develop that further as well, so that's really, really important. So I've done the maternity dentistry. Gynae cancers, I think you mentioned about them being increased. Certainly, I'll take a look at that in more detail for you and write back to you about that. But our understanding is that there was a bit of a time during the COVID when a lot of people weren't able to access services, and there certainly was a certain fear of people presenting. So we are experiencing across the health service that some people, and many actually illnesses, are presenting later than we'd have liked, and therefore that doesn't have a potential impact on that. So it's something we're very conscious of. But that is certainly an impact of the pandemic, and really there was a hit to services for 1 to 2 years, and we're beginning to see some of the impact of that coming through. And the challenge for us is to make sure we are responsive to that in moving forward, but happy to look at that in more detail for you and provide more answers on that. But the key point there is that people have symptoms, to make sure they come forward now and give us the chance to help them, and that's really important. And finally, the emergency surgery update. Declan, I think, asked for a comment on that. That has been actually very, very successful. What we find is that the care that patients are getting, they're getting prompt access to emergency surgery, and that's even for every patient in the trust gets the same access to the same consultant team in an expedited manner. But also we find that recruitment to the trust has been actually very, very successful. We've had a number of consultants who have joined our team, partly because of this model they've got where they have an emergency surgery on one site, and they're also attracted to the elective overnight stay centre in the Daisy Hill site. So our surgeons are actually really keen, so that allows them to do their planned elective work in an environment not impacted by emergency care, and yet they can do the emergency work on the other site as well. The separation is really, really powerful, allowing them to get better throughput and to get more patients treated. So that has proven to be actually very popular with the staff, and I think patients are benefiting as well, because more patients are getting through our elective surgery centre, and the patients are getting good access to emergency surgery as well. So I'm also speaking to some of the consultants about that only last week, and they said indeed it had made a big impact, and it was working really well in their view as well, because they were getting really good opportunity to see patients on both sites. And the patient I was talking about was a patient who was accompanied in the area.
There we go. I'll answer the questions in relation to the CTCC. So the trust purchased the land and the plans at the new CTC site 2 years ago. And we have been preparing a business case and outline business case to the department, and have been working with Health Estates quite closely on that case. The case has been submitted to the department in April, and we still not have received confirmation back. We're waiting on a letter of support, and that particular capital project was on the 10-year capital list as a priority. And I know this question was raised at the Health Committee last week to the department, and they did say that it will go ahead. However, they are concerned at the revenue consequentials given the funding constraints that we're under at the moment. So the letter of support we are waiting from the department, the SPPG, and then we will then submit the business case into the department and onto the Department of Finance. So we have a bit to go yet in terms of the approvals for the CTC business case. The time frame we had was 2029, and that will obviously be very heavily dependent on the approvals, but we were required that time in terms of the tender and construction. The original case had included GP surgery for primary care, and we knew in our revised model that we will hold some of the space there for primary care. It will also be used for community treatment, and it will help to relieve some of the pressures and overcrowding within Daisy Hill. I will take some of the outpatients away, so we will be able to expand and use our services in a different way in Daisy Hill, and hopefully give us an opportunity to do some estates work and improvements on Daisy Hill. The question in relation to the MRI scanner, I will take that back because I wasn't aware it was down again. I know we've had problems with it, and we've brought in our supplier who has fixed it. But if it's down again, I will find out. But we do have on our capital plan for next year the MRI that we are currently leasing. We are proposing to purchase it. And we have a business case currently in with the department for that as well. So I will find that out and let you know what the impact has been in relation to the power in relation to the MRI. That was all.
Thank you so much. Any other questions from the floor? Oh, yeah, go ahead, Councillor. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Councillor.
Oh, thanks, Chair. I'd just like to take this opportunity tonight to ask for a general update then in relation to Kilkeel Primary Care Centre, specific concern towards the GP contracts. You will be aware that there were great concerns regarding the viability of the clinic in Kilkeel, with fears that it was going to be closing soon with the expiration of the GP contract. So there's also great concerns with the clinic, as local users are frequently experiencing major issues trying to get an appointment with their GP. I know this is a major issue across the north for clinics and GP clinics, but it seems to be acutely felt within Kilkeel. So I just would like an update in relation to that clinic. And then I suppose my second question on a completely different topic. In relation to suicide prevention, are there any plans for a review or change to the approaches taken to deal with mental health and suicide prevention? I understand there's massive demand on big charities, frontline services. However, it would appear that the stats and statistics haven't been improving. Are there any plans to rethink how the Trust as a whole approaches suicide, with maybe a look at fresh thinking and new and new approaches? I would like to specifically mention the Well Group in Kilkeel, who seem to be in a league of their own when it comes to suicide prevention, and there's some of the stuff they're doing that isn't sort of mainstream. So just in regards to suicide prevention, is there a rethink across the board on how we deal with that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, and Councillor McAteer.
Yeah, no, but it's just come back to Cavan, just around that the treatment centre. Just a wee bit concerned in the fact that the original business case that couldn't be amended quickly because, as I said earlier on in my question, that was the very last community out of that whole tranche of community hubs to be built. The rest of them all but Belfast, Lisburn, Banbridge, right? And the Irish left last. You know, and then we're still conducting the end of the day a new business case to support that. And people knew a long, long time ago that, probably at least 3 years ago, that the GPs hadn't got the deal, at least the deal that they were looking for to move there. And no incentive either to do that, to get them to move there. So it's very disappointing to hear that, to be honest with you. And I know you're talking about giving a priority, but a completion date 2029. You know, it looks very much like it's bad business. poor reflection, really, on the organisational skills of health service as combined with both of us. You know, I know council went through so much angst in terms of planning around your threat to work and facilitate the service in your now we're hearing that it's 2029, which probably inevitably means 2030 plus. So I'm disappointed to hear that, but maybe have a chat with you after the meeting. Just around that.
All right, thank you, and Councillor Young.
Hi, sorry, Steve. Just I wanted to clarify about the international doctors. Did you say that? I know that they're all going to work. There's going to be cross-site working, and I know that there's orientation taking place and whatever. But did you say that potentially 40 would be on the Daisy Hill site? I just wanted to clarify. Thanks.
Thanks, sir. I'll just take that first. I said it's around about 30 to 40%. I don't have exact numbers, but I can provide the numbers to you, exactly the number. What we tend to do is actually not working across site, because that's quite disruptive to the doctors when they're coming into an area. So the doctors we've got in Daisy Hill are dedicated to Daisy Hill, and they can build up their experience and skills while they cement their practice in the UK practice. Now, maybe even later, as they develop, doctors on either site may very well rotate to get the additional experience, because there's some specialties like renal medicine is only in the Daisy Hill site, and some doctors may be interested in learning something about that. So there's opportunities for doctors to rotate between the service we have and the trust, where one will go and replace each other and so forth. And that's about helping the retention of doctors to get them opportunities to gain broader experience. So 30-40-ish percent, but we'll get the exact numbers for you. The Kilkeel Centre, Michael mentioned that. The resignation of the previous GP partners occurred, and then there was unsuccessful recruitment processes, so therefore the Southern Trust was asked to take over the managing the Kilkeel practice while it was seeking new partners to take over that practice, and that was the request, the temporary request of the Department of Health, and that's since November 2023. And we're still ongoing work with the SPBG Strategic Performance and Planning Group to try and work through to see if we can identify a new GP contractor. And that still is a concern for us, obviously, and it would be much better to have a GP in control of that practice. So we're still actively seeking to do that, that people hand the practice back to GPs working in the local community. But just to assure you that we still are interested in progressing that. So that's that. Suicide prevention you also asked about, and the changing approach. I suppose one of the things that struck me about that is that the team we have in Southern Trust, and some of the other trusts as well, is that they're very much focused on trying to provide care for a patient's community, providing crisis response as needed, but it's community-based care with a dedicated team of psychiatrists and community psychiatric nurses as well, working that is very patient-centred. In terms of the suicides that do occur, they're all raised as adverse incidents, what we call serious adverse incidents, and they're all investigated by all the trusts. And we extract learning from all those cases and then try and put that back into the practice as well. So we do that quite well also as well to try and make sure any learning that's possible, we can feed that back to the practitioners. But I suppose it's worth mentioning that suicide, and it's not all about medical care, it's very much a societal thing as well. So society, the social deprivation that we have, certainly in Northern Ireland, some areas, is very, very important as well. And particularly the age groups, usually quite often young men. There's issues about employment as well that are really important that we try and address that. So some of that is actually a multi-agency type response that we need as well to try and do this, not just health, but working with colleagues such as yourself and the council to try and think of this more. And I suppose the Integrated Partnership Board is one of the areas where we're thinking about trying to progress those very sort of issues and get agencies across a number of sectors, education, finance, council and health, to work together on these really, really pressing problems. So, and that's many ways the innovative thinking we're thinking about is trying to draw wider, and that's bringing in not only the, you know, ourselves in healthcare, but those in the third sector and private sector to try and work together, multi-agency with the charities as well to work together. So that's one of the things we're doing, and certainly things I've seen across the UK, and that multi-agency approach is hopefully more effective and draws in broader for that. So I think that's part of the rethink there, and rethink there as well. So hope that's helpful for that.
Yes, go ahead, Councillor Rice.
Thanks, Chair. No, just on that then, so if there is no GPs coming forth for Kilkeel, realistically, in the long term, what are we looking at then? Because I know it's a short-term basis that the trust has took over. That clinic, is it a case of there will be a date set, sort of, we can't hand that over to a GP, then it could become an issue where you're looking at closure, or...
Well, obviously it sounds quite complex, and I don't think we're at the stage of giving up on that at present. But one of the things is the GP partner will be managing the practice as well. So you can get GP services where GPs can come in a salary position to provide some of those services, but they're not necessarily managing the service. So at the minute we are sort of managing the service as well, but ideally we think it's more better to have that managed at the local level, because then you get more innovation in practice and opportunities that the local GP will be able to see to transform and change services based on the needs of the patients that they see in that particular locality. Whereas the trust is just so far away, it's difficult, so we're really basically holding it steady as opposed to trying to develop the services, which is where the benefit of a local GP would be, when they can look at that and see what opportunities they can see from their general practice perspective. But if it comes as a salary GP, you don't have the same sort of, like, obviously you're interested in the patients, but not just about the management. It's just a different sort of model, I suppose.
Thank you very much. Any other questions from the floor? Any questions from online? That's it. Well, Michael, thank you so much for coming. So thank you, Dr. Stephen Austin and Catherine Taggart, for answering questions tonight. So that is it for our special council meeting. So have a great night. Safe journey home. All right. Thank you.